keep this frequency clear.
But guess what? You don't get to tell me when I can stop speaking. Well,
tune in to Queering the Air.
Report on trans and intersex issues with accuracy, dignity, and respect.
Podcast edition, and therefore, sorry, no music.
Change the narrative rather than combat the narrative.
I know who I am. Took me 20 years to get here. I'm not going to let some idiot senator destroy that.
3CR Community Radio.
Our stories are best told when we are the ones telling them. It helps combat the perpetuation of stereotypes, misinformation, and lies.
I discovered in the face of overwhelming prejudice and persecution an incredible strength through being fiercely fabulous.
Welcome to Queering the Air, Sundays from 3 to 4 on 3CR. 3CR is proud to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which we transmit people-powered radio. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Yes, it will. Never ceded, and so therefore will always be Aboriginal land. Now, welcome to the Queering the Air show. And my name is Madison Moffat. My pronouns are she and her. And I was going to be joined with my lovely co-presenter, Maria. However, unfortunately, the poor thing fell down steps in Parliament Station yesterday. And as a matter of fact, we came in to do a few little pre-recorded things as a special for the show, only to find that her elbow and shoulder got worse and worse as the hours progressed, and so we instead made our way to hospital. So, this is wishing Maria well. Please get well soon. All right, let's get into it. First up,
meow 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 meow
Sounds interesting, I think. So it will explore the theme of life, interpreted in any way the artist chooses. This might include the literal beginnings of life, personal transformation, new chapters, identity, or the emotional complexities of creating life through fertility treatment. And I'd say that that's keyed in with their co-sponsor. So the key details, the exhibition would be between 13th to the 27th of October 2025, and it would be held at the Pride Gallery in Victorian Pride Centre. And selected artists would have their work exhibited in the Pride Gallery and may be featured in Genea Fertility and Victorian Pride Centre communications and social media. And the payment you would receive for said art is $250. So there is a expression of interest form, the details for which we will have on our podcast page, and the deadline for that expression of interest is 1 week away, the 14th of September 2025. LGBTI plus aging community and social club meets on a regular basis, and their next one is on the September the 15th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. So basically, are you 50 years or older and looking to connect with other LGBTQIA plus people in welcoming and exclusive space? It's funny when I'm trying to read different other people's different mixtures of those letters. But anyway, I got there. After an amazing turnout and smashing success of their inaugural meeting of the social club, it's back for more. So join them for a gathering to meet like-minded people, share ideas, and help shape this new community initiative. Together, they'll plan future events, build friendships, and create a space that honours their shared stories and experiences. So the next one is on Monday, the 15th of September, 2025. 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Victorian Pride Centre, which for those who still don't know is on Fitzroy Street in St Kilda. So it is free, but you do need to RSVP, and again the link will be on our webpage. So I think that that's actually quite an important one. You know, I think that those who are, say, between the ages of around 40 through to about 50, 55, will often find that there are significantly lesser number of community events for them, and indeed targeted at age ranges that they do not fit into. So I find it encouraging, you know, that there is a group that is looking towards gathering interests and concerns and social benefits for people within that particular age group. Now, this is a little special one. This isn't so much for a queer event, but supporting a queer person. So that person is having as part of the Emerging Writers Festival, a whimsical workshop where they'll teach you how to use everyday objects and spaces as sources of inspiration in your writing, and encouraging you to think outside the box, let go of logic, and allow your imagination to take centre stage. And it will be done in partnership with the Moonee Valley Library Service. And the person concerned who'll be delivering it, it'll be none other than Ivy Crago, who, apart from being a theatre maker, writer and producer based in Narm, also happens to be a staff member at the Victorian Pride Centre, and a lovely, helpful one at that. So I thought I'd give a little plug. So, what else? Well, at the Victorian Pride Centre on the 14th of September from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m, there will be a Move in Pride Sports Expo. Now, those who know me personally know that this isn't necessarily my jam, but, you know, diversity, both in terms of people and their jams. So that's going to be at the Theatrette and the Victorian Pride Centre, which again is Fitzroy Street in St Kilda. And basically, it's an in-person event, and the idea is that it's a free, family-friendly day where inclusive sports and physical activities for all bodies, identities and abilities are showcased in a way where you can meet the people, find out more, and find out how you can attend and participate. So highlights will include inclusive sport and fitness demonstrations, some come and try sessions, information stalls, of course, and this will get you going, a sausage sizzle, and general community vibes. And now it is free to attend. Registration for it helps, however, so that they can make sure that the organisers can make sure that they have a safe and inclusive space for all. So please do so. Another thing that they're doing very similar, I think there's a bit of a shift at the moment towards sporting activities and exercise activities, which I don't think is a bad thing. And this one I might even think of myself. That is Move in Pride yoga workshops at the Victorian Pride Centre. So basically, the idea is you get it's quite inclusive, and you just get ready to unwind and stretch it out with a chill intro. This is their emphasis: a chill intro to yoga. So no experience required. It says just bring your Zen vibes. Well, not known for those, but I could give that a go. So basically, there is a cost. It's a general admission is $20, concession $15. As an example, basically each Tuesday evening we'll have a 60-minute accessible yoga class, 10-minute guided meditation, and 20 minutes of relaxed social time with tea and chats. I don't know. I'd have to say if someone set 20 minutes for me to have social time, I'd feel rushed. But anyway, I suppose we could all then just head towards the more social areas of the Victorian Pride Centre and mingle there afterwards. So, yeah, to give an example, on the 9th of September, that session's going to target on areas of tension through doing playful movements, gentle stretching, and guided breath. So, yeah, I have to say that doesn't sound too daunting. And then that would be followed by a meditative practice for 10 minutes of breath-focused meditation to soften holding patterns. I know a little bit about yoga, so they're talking about in between the postures, being able to hold those postures, and if you breathe a certain way, doing that will be easier. So, yeah, I dare say, you know, with a bit of background as I have, I spent a couple of months at a yoga ashram, I think that is a pretty relaxed, chilled session, and so I'd encourage people to give it a go. There's going to be a book launch at Hares and Hyenas on Thursday, the 11th of September. Dr. Paul Gerber is releasing a book called Sex, Gender and Identity, Trans Rights in Australia. That will go for 2 hours. And basically, the point to it is that this preeminent human rights legal scholar will outline through their book and also during the talk a whole range of aspects of how we can shift away from blame and exclusion and shift towards respect, protection and inclusion of trans people. I'd have to say that's not a bad agenda. Some good news. Maria Belolia was a Queering the Air guest in 2024 and spoke about that year's LGBTIQA+ Multicultural Fair Day for 2024. But she will also be hosting a new one very soon. We know the date. It will be taking place on Saturday, the 8th of November. And this time it will be supported by the Whittlesea City Council, which may give us some clue as to the general area that it will be at, and when we learn more, we will tell you more. Now, those who tune in to Trans Creator Radio, 3CR's Trans Creator Radio, that includes moi as a presenter, may be familiar, or may still or be familiar nonetheless, with the First Nations artist and arts events organiser, Idris McChesney. We had a long chat on Trans Creator Radio about their current works and their aspirations, and one of the more wonderful ones was the plans to hold a charity art exhibition. And basically, the key thing around this is that the artists would donate artworks, and then that would help fund gender-affirming medical care to the gender-diverse community. And I just think that is just beautiful. So let's talk about that just a little more. It's basically going to be called Wunjanin and Hope. Wunjanin and Hope. And so in Idris's First Nations language, Wunjining, I'm hoping that I'm pronouncing that correctly, is derived from, again, apologies for pronunciation, Wadjuk Noongar, which means healing. So it's basically healing and hope is the name of the exhibition. I just think that's lovely. It's a story of community coming together to heal and have hope for the future generations, which I think, you know, is a theme that well and truly matches, you know, the community service that this exhibition is meant to then support. As I say, all profits from the artwork sold will be divided between everyone that needs funding for gender-affirming care. Now, this isn't just for surgeries. The funding can be for hormone treatment, puberty blockers, and other things that bring that gender-affirming care to that person. So, at the moment, loosely, the exhibition will be running from January to February 2026. But indeed, the nature of these kinds of events, it's always good to be foretold. That way, artists and others who may want to pitch in and help can start early and make sure that this is a great success. So there will be links on our podcast page for artists who wish to donate art and for those who may seek funding for gender-affirming care once those funds have been acquired. So, there we have it. This has been...
Meow 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 meow
meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow meow just a terrible pronunciation of their surname. It's not meant to be said like, as if it's said by some ridiculous stereotype French baker. It is Marcel Lemant, you know, good old Aussie pronunciation. So, we didn't quite finish that interview, and it was well worth, I think, hearing in full. In this part, I believe from memory, the interview moves on to certain experiences with doing market stalls, intention to roll out a rather interesting trans writing group, which would result in an anthology book being published. So I think that's very exciting news for those who are TGDNB.
Can you talk to...
And can you talk? That was me pressing the button accidentally. And then from there, just talking a little bit about perhaps the future of queer literature. So, you know, we had 10 minutes of this interview, jam-packed with those three topics, and didn't quite have time last week. And because my maths, quite frankly, is terrible, clearly. So we'll now listen to Marcel Lemant and his wonderful thoughts on said topics.
Can you talk to me about your experiences in self-publishing, which of course also tends to therefore lend itself to self-distribution?
Yeah, I started in my early 20s, and I think I really sort of latched onto self-publishing out of impatience. I was just, I wanted to write and I didn't want to wait for the publishing schedules or wait for someone to approve of my work. I just wanted to get it out there and start connecting to with readers. And since then, it's been a very interesting path. It is very challenging because, as you said, you do have to take on the distribution yourself.
Yes.
And there is still a bit of that kind of stigma around self-publishing, whereas it's not as easy to sort of access the places, bookstores, etc.
Yes.
Places with, that have established platforms for selling books. So you do have to kind of prove yourself. And that is a long process of, you know, gathering people who like your book, getting reviews, making sure that everything looks professional. And, you know, it is running a business. So, you know, you do have to think about kind of, yeah, what's happening in the market, which is, it can feel a little counterintuitive to what you actually want to write. But I found a way to sort of try and marry the two, whereas I like to do whatever I want, but I also am kind of aware of what other people are doing and what's actually selling. So, yeah, it's a bit of a tightrope in that regards.
Yeah. Where do you think the future of queer fiction lies?
I think it lies in our sort of community efforts and coming together to create for each other. You know, I am hoping to put together an anthology soon after my myth-making workshop of all, you know, newly written trans myths. And I think that kind of, you know, zines, anthologies, really, you know, approachable works that are, you know, almost collective in nature, is, you know, it's very queer-coded to me. So I think it's a really natural sort of path.
Yeah, and that's a nice little segue into something I did want to speak with you about, and that is it does seem that we share a passion for communal writing. And I'm always interested in, you know, plugging as many fellow encourages, is that a word? No, it is now.
It is now.
Because I think that it's important for those who might have the ability to do so, to get out there and encourage others within the queer community to write and to be published. Now, with a series of workshops that you're conducting, I think you're going to be making an important contribution to that in the near future. So I thought I'd get you to outline it more fully.
Yeah, thanks. So I'll be running a workshop starting mid-September about myth making and sort of looking at myths that exist in pop culture, which I kind of think of, you know, big stories of our time, but also, you know, the older ancient myths that we all know and love, the Greek myths, you know, there's the bountiful myths of cross cultures. But there's something engaging with that format that I find is very empowering in that, you know, rewriting them as queer or rewriting them as exploring trans issues. It's a great way to contribute to the zeitgeist of the dialogue that's been happening around these stories for so long. Yes. So in my workshops, we're going to be starting from pitching an idea to each other and, you know, getting feedback on that all the way to finishing a complete story, which will hopefully end up in an anthology. So those workshops will be all online, and each one will sort of cover different parts of writing. So it's good to sort of work on those skills together. We'll be doing a lot of exercises. There'll be a lot of workshopping and feedback. And I really do love running these workshops. I think it is the greatest joy in my career that I experienced, because I've done it for the last few years with various different sort of funding and formats. But it's, you know, the coming together of writers and just having that, especially just kind of keeping it within community, yes. That kind of unspoken understanding, whereas you don't have to explain the basics of, you know, queer and transness, so you can kind of explore beyond that, which I think is extremely valuable. Also, every person who does my workshops and the little communities we build around it have been so such wonderful people and just so willing to, you know, be there to support each other and to encourage each other. And yeah, I've found in my writing to be such an empowering force in my life that sharing that with others, I think it is, as you said, it's sort of a great thing to participate in and, try and encourage that in people.
Yes. What do you think of the place of queer writing and literature vis-a-vis the mainstream audience?
It's interesting. I went to, where did I go? One of the big bookstores. And I was like, okay, there's a lot of books here. Where are my gays? Where are my queers? What's going on? There was a tiny little corner that had the rainbows up, and it's a couple of shelves dedicated. And I was like, that's really nice. But I don't know. It's kind of like a genre in itself. It's like, oh, queer stuff is for queer people. Or it's, you know, kind of relegated to the corner, unless it's a dedicated bookstore like Hares and Hyenas, which we all know and love. So I find that kind of interesting that it's that I almost see it as that kind of tokenistic kind of approach to inclusion. However, I know there are a lot of good people doing good stuff. But again, in the more the traditional sense, the market dictates. So if the queer stories are for queer people, that's a smaller number of books sold, and there just won't be the same sort of investment, unfortunately. Yeah, I guess it does kind of come down to numbers, which is great when you're in Melbourne because it's, rich with queer life. So hopefully there's a bit more of a push behind it in our sort of state. But yeah.
Well, I think this is where communal writing can circumvent some of that, you know. And I don't know, you might recall when I was at the Trans Book Festival, a lot of people were talking about, the topic sort of turned to the importance of people being paid, for the writing they do. And I just went, look, hate to actually sort of break that circuit a bit, but as far as I'm concerned, the biggest push needs to be just to be out there. And, although being paid is important in terms of work, some work may be voluntary. And particularly if you're trying to break new ground, it's actually a form of activism rather than a form of commerce.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that in terms of yeah, that's almost like kind of the queer role in society too, is kind of taking the activism activist sort of role, because we've always had to fight for everything. So it makes sense that we kind of have that rebellious nature, and we push the boundaries, and in art and writing that is incredibly exciting. There's a lot of sort of, actually, now that I think of it, some more sort of independent sort of zines that are encouraging more of that kind of, yeah, that creative risk taking, which I think is really awesome to see in the queer community.
No, absolutely. And hope to expose more of that in coming episodes, actually. In fact,
Fantastic.
you and I can join forces a little bit on that.
Always would love that, Madison. Awesome.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for being on our little show, Marcel, our little radical radio show. And thank you for being out there, not just in terms of yourself, but it's a real, I know it's a real effort. It's a real effort to get out there, to get self-published, to push your output out into the community, to have those engagements. I'm sure it's satisfying, but I'm also sure that it can be quite exhausting. And hats off to you.
Oh, thanks, Madison. Yeah, no, you do understand. It sounds like at a very sort of marrow level about the difficulties. But yeah, it is really rewarding as much as it is challenging. So thank you so much for having me. I love the show, and I look forward to future episodes.
Fantastic, Marcel. And on that note, I bid you adieu.
Thanks, Madison.
Marcel Lamant there, talking in terms of their efforts in this particular case of this episode, more the mercantile and community engagement element of what they have to do to keep their queer literature sustainable. So, and I think there's quite a few call-outs there that hopefully can be of use to anybody who might be thinking of doing something for themselves and for their community in the future. Wendy Carlos is an American musician and composer. Assigned male at birth, she openly lived as a woman since her 30s, and so that was the late 60s, and publicly discussed this in 1979 to raise public awareness. They studied physics and music and music composition before helping with the development of the Moog synthesizer alongside fellow electronic musicians and technicians at the Columbia Princeton Electronic Music Center, including being the person to first suggest adding a touch-sensitive keyboard, which seems obvious to all of us now, right? I mean, when you think of a Moog synthesizer, you think about the keys and the plugs, but was not actually part of the originally intended design. And they produced a massively successful album in 1968 called Switched on Bach, which featured musical pieces by Joseph Bach, which popularized the use of the Moog synthesizer by others in pop music, having won 3 Grammy Awards. I particularly know of her work in composing the scores for the films A Clockwork Orange, The Shining and Tron. Here is Wendy Carlos demonstrating how they used their Moog synthesizer back in 1970.
And by hitting a note on the keyboard now, I'm connected up, so I'll hear that one sound. It's a very low sound. It's very bright. If I manually turn this knob, you'll listen to the sound get considerably duller. Here, it gets very dull down here. It's very bright here. Instead of doing this manually, I can do it automatically with what's called an envelope generator. It generates the envelope being this type of motion that I'm shaping the tone with. So I'll do it this way. And that can be speeded up till we almost start hearing a plucked string. If we turn that around and make it open up instead of closing, it does this, which was quite a surprise when I first heard it. It has almost a trumpet-like quality or trombone quality in this range. Let's show you how one of these sounds might be laid in to a piece. Okay, we're in tune. Everything sounds like it's about right. I'll start the A track. And you'll hear all the other components of this score, and I'll add in the solo.
So I'm about to play Carlos's abridged version of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Fourth Movement. And as we listen, consider this. At this time, the Moog synthesizer could only make one sound at a time. Therefore, she had to play every single part separately and then layer them together using an 8-track tape recorder, layering each new part over all the previously recorded parts. Sheer torture. Wendy Carlos, an out-and-proud trans woman, a pioneer in electronic music, is currently 85. And as if the accomplishments I've described so far were not enough, she's also a solar eclipse photographer of all things, whose work is published online by NASA. Now here is Wendy Carlos's abridged version of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, Fourth Movement, on the Moog synthesizer. Known by many hoary old punks as the March from A Clockwork Orange. As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording. As I listened to her sing, I felt a little tight fluttering in my guttywuts, as I knew vidy well that it was in fact the fourth movement of the Ninth Symphony from Ludwig van. As the protagonist of A Clockwork Orange recites. Anyway, a bit of fun film referencing. So, what am I going to talk about now? Well, it's going to be a little more serious. So, I think it's time to revisit something that has a tendency to reel its ugly head far, far too late every year. So I think that the tension and the trauma that's felt across the trans and wider queer community associated with police marching as part of the Midsummer Pride March is known to Victoria Police. And it has been raised on many an occasion in the past, and I, alongside other comrades, raised this directly with Victorian Police in the form of a group that we called the Trans Justice Alliance Victoria back in January and February of this year. And it seems that queer events and queer event organisers and LGBTQ plus groups should not have to adjudicate whether Victoria Police, which would participate at the Pride March, be it uniformed or otherwise. And the police are to maintain law and order, or at least that's what they say they're for. And so that being the case, this would include avoiding any unnecessary behaviour that they know incites fear and violence. And this was put to the Victorian Police by Trans Justice Alliance Victoria in January. And it was responded to by the police on the 14th of February. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't touch on it on radio, what that response was, until a little more timely. And I'll explain why it is that I'm choosing this time to start a discussion again around this, despite the fact the march is not until February next year. So the first aspect, the first demand that was in the letter by TJAV to the Victorian Police read as follows, and this is the one that we'll focus on today. The Victorian Police cease their incessant bullying of Pride March organisers and participants, and instead accept that the principles of decency and public safety require they voluntarily cease participating in the Melbourne Pride March. Now, the response I got from the police, which will also explicate what happened so that I don't have to recap, because what they're saying here is true, at least in terms of the facts, if not the motivations. The police response reads as follows, and again, this was received by people within the Trans Justice Alliance Victoria, including myself, on the 14th of February this year. After extensive consultation with the Midsummer representatives, Victoria Police withdrew from participating in the 2025 Midsummer Pride March. Victoria Police was extremely disappointed that some of the conditions placed on our organisation made it untenable for our continued involvement. Victoria Police LGBTIQA+ employees have made a significant contribution to the Pride March event through 29 unbroken years of participation. While Victoria Police did not march, we want to reiterate our ongoing commitment to supporting the LGBTIQA+ community, etc. And, you know, I just don't think that's what we're going to focus on today, so I don't want to discount that comment. You know, it's possible that on occasions such organisations can provide occasional support, but that's not the focus. So I basically don't believe here, and this I think is the crux of the issue, and if this does flare up again, I think it will be in part because of what I'm about to raise. I do not believe that the police made the right choice. Not because I think they should march, pretty clearly I don't. But I don't believe, you know, that it's possible to make the right choice in these circumstances, because no choice can be the right choice if it was made for the wrong reasons. Now, Trans Justice Alliance Victoria emphasised that the police needed to recognise this issue as one of public safety, where they had an organisational responsibility to avoid any unnecessary behaviour that they knew had an avoidable likelihood of causing harm. And indeed, in its own little way, TJAV, Trans Justice Alliance Victoria, we actually made the news. Hurrah! As the ABC News website said, a letter sent to police this month by Trans Justice Alliance Victoria called on members to voluntarily cease participating in the parade. The tension and trauma felt across the trans and wider queer community associated with police marching as part of Midsummer Pride March is known to Victoria Police, it said. Well, so for once, if I may be so bold to suggest, the ABC at least got that right in terms of their choice of quoting us. Because that selection, at least they're recognising that what TJAV was emphasising as being the core causal factor that needed to be eliminated was that the police were ignoring deep-seated public fear of police by marching in front of the LGBTQIA+ community despite repeated and sometimes emotionally charged, including from myself, I got emotional, requests and demands that they stop. Now, tellingly, again to its credit, admittedly, you know, don't love the ABC as much as I used to, but okay, you know, credit where credit's due. When the ABC News website quoted a Midsummer representative, that quote was as follows. Midsummer Chief Executive Karen Bryant said the uniform ban aimed to ensure the parade was inclusive for all participants. This isn't just about the police, and it's certainly not just about police uniforms, she said. We have all ages and all faiths or cultures, different identities, and I think it's fair to say that a lot of our communities are very vulnerable communities that have experienced trauma. And before I continue the quote from the ABC, please note the similar public safety and risk management language in this specific quote to what Trans Justice Alliance Victoria had to say. And it follows. We know that triggers are unique to individuals, but a trauma-informed practice looks at safety and it seeks to remove, where practical, the common triggers, Ms. Bryant said. So it seems that we are actually quite aligned as to what the issue actually is. So given that this is the key causal factor of the harm that is being done, and it has been done, what is Victoria's police response to it? Well, if I may be so bold, the answer to that is a combination of silence and distraction. Firstly, they have not publicly addressed the public safety factor. Then they distract by trying to make out the whole situation is just this silly argument about being in uniform. What were the conditions that the police found so unacceptable? Not being able to march in full uniform. I mean, now bear in mind, they could have done what every other uniformed organisation did, which was wear a branded T-shirt instead of the uniform. And clearly, I think that would have been unacceptable, wouldn't have met my ideals, but it does show the extent to which it is false that the police could not have marched due to the uniform ban. Now, tellingly, a little less known expectation that the Victoria Police had in January 2023, when they were supposedly negotiating, end quote, with Midsummer March Management, is as follows. Now, the Victorian Pride Network chair, so this isn't someone within the senior ranks of the police, this is someone who is representing the Victorian Pride Network chair, who's recorded as saying that the police had requested that they be accompanied by armed support or security. So that's the Victorian Pride Network chair sharing with the community that the Victorian police said that, well, if we can't march in uniform, we need at least to be able to be accompanied by armed support or security. Armed support or security? Do they seriously believe that when marching at the Pride March in any given year, that they are somehow facing a special amount of danger compared to others in the community? Imagine if Transgender Victoria demanded that armed support and security march alongside them when they march at Midsummer. You'd never hear the end of it from the alt-right. So, you know, so much, it's just, so no. The police did not come to their senses and understand that marching would cause significant harm to others and therefore decide to pull out. Instead, they had a big sook about not being allowed to be in full uniform. As if this is the only way, and this is what I find truly insane, the only way they can be their authentic selves is to march in full uniform. Then they pulled out with a very loud media circus where they focused on themselves being the victim. Astounding. Now, why would I bring this up now? Well, this remains an issue that needs to be watched. And believe me, it's less than 6 months now before we have the next Pride March. We will blink and we'll be too close to this issue to be able to do anything about it, just like we were this year. So firstly, the Midsummer Festival organisers said in January that they would seek feedback from stakeholders after the 2025 march and review whether the ban will continue. Secondly, there is no ban on police marching, only in police marching in full uniform. So if the police decided to instead march in a branded polo shirt, that source of trauma and subsequent harm that we are meant to be addressing here would still present itself.
Thirdly, I think that this whole issue tends to violently flare up in part because it becomes realised once again each January, after around 10 months of neglecting it and doing nothing about it, that, you know, it's come back again. And I'm concerned that the same may occur again next year. Do we know what Midsummer's efforts to seek post-March feedback on this issue was? Do we therefore have any notion as to whether the ban will remain in place? Let's get that conversation happening now, rather than another potential flare-up during what is meant to be a celebrative time for our community. Have you heard of what the police intend to do or lobby for regarding the 2026 March? I haven't. And I've actually been part of, until very recently, consultative processes with the police. So, of course, it's not surprising that, as of late, Victoria Police haven't mentioned anything here. They probably just like the whole issue to go away. But I think we need to get on the front foot this time. Let's ensure that Victoria Police have no intention of flaring this situation all over again, causing unnecessary disruption to our celebratory period and causing further distress and psychosocial harm within our community. Now, these kinds of public safety issues can suffer from insensitivity by responsible organisations. Now, that aspect has been well discussed in the community. But another exacerbating factor that's common to public safety issues is a lack of foresightedness in managing issues of harm, even when those issues of harm are known to us because of the past. We let it go by until it's too late all over again to prevent. And basically that results in a last-minute, knee-jerk reaction that can often create more psychosocial harm than it prevents. So, I call upon the Victorian Police to assure the LGBTQIA+ community that it will not be attempting to march on the 2026 Midsummer Pride March, be it in uniform or polo shirts, or indeed with armed security. I call upon the Midsummer organisers to be transparent. Not that I'm saying that they're lacking transparency at the moment, but let's be transparent over the course of the next 6 months and sort this out transparently and share with the LGBTIQA+ community what has been done so far to seek feedback from the 2025 experience, what they are yet to do and will do in that regard, and advise of their findings and recommendations with sufficient sensitivity and with sufficient timeliness so that the community can respond with any concerns long prior to the event. As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording. And that was The Warriors, not warriors as in fighting warriors as in those who worry, W-O-R-R-I-E-I-S, and being a sort of agit punk band, quite a good name, I think. And a song with a completely unrelated, I assure you, unrelated title, Yes, All Cops. This has been Queering the Air, broadcast on 3CR Radical Radio, on 855 on your AM radio dial, and digitally streamed on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Now, next up is the Salaam Radio Show, where they'll be playing a previously recorded program. So stick around for that. Every program from the Salaam Radio Show is a worthwhile one. So we'll come out. It's funny because this is actually a coming out story. We will sign off, rather, by playing Stepping Out. And this is just a wonderful track from an artist that had always earned my attention back in the 1980s and the attention of many. His name was Joe Jackson. You know, quite a pop oriented guy, certainly not concerned with the extent to which his music was commercial or otherwise, but then also, on the other hand, refused to be on MTV because he hated the commercialization of music video. So there you go. Anyway, this is a song of his called Stepping Out. I have played it before, but it's a nice little way to fade the show out. And the relevance from a queer perspective is that Joe Jackson, quite recently, only a few years ago, in an interview, just sort of out of the blue, let the interviewer know that he was in a relationship with a man. I just loved that, and I loved the general... casualness of that, of dropping that info in. It was just lovely. So this is Stepping Out by Joe Jackson, and it's the ultrasound mix, the 12-inch mix, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the quintessential mix. As this is the podcast version, this music is not part of the recording.